here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
And before I dive into At Your Service, hey, good evening, everybody. Brad Young here. Maria hasn't been able to punk me since like July, I think was the last time I was in on a Wednesday night. And when I say punk, I mean she loves to play some clip of me talking while I'm standing here, making me listen to myself. So thank you so much, Maria.
I've had withdrawals with not having you here. What'll I do? I'm like, it's Wednesday. What'll I do?
Boy.
Should I call Brad at home?
Yeah. That, you know, that legal analyst you quoted, that guy's a genius.
You know, the truth of the matter is that when I think of stuff and then I'm like, I'll call Brad, you really can talk on a lot of topics.
Oh, well.
You're really well-versed legally on a whole bunch of subjects, so... That's jokes aside. That's why I know I can always get the straight story.
You can always call me because, listen, KMOX has the best audience of any radio station in America. And so, listen, they expect a lot. So I try to bring my A game.
You do.
Thanks for punking me yet again here this evening. Thanks, Maria.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you. Have you ever experienced this feeling whenever you go on vacation and you have a great time on vacation? But when you come back, you're like, hey, I kind of missed being here at my own house. That's the way I feel tonight. I just checked. I haven't been on a Wednesday night since July something because of baseball. That's great. I love baseball. I'm a season ticket holder. I love watching baseball. But now that baseball is behind us, at least here in St. Louis, I hopefully will be back on Wednesday nights for At Your Service. Kyle Sixta is flying the plane tonight. Kyle, good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, Brad.
Hey, I got a question for you. And I just like Maria likes to punk me, I don't give you any prep when I'm gonna ambush you with a question. But today is National Horror Movie Day.
Ooh.
You big fan of horror movies?
I am.
Okay. Give me some, because I'm not. I mean, I watched them when I was... You know, in my 20s, mm-hmm. Maybe in my 30s. And then when I hit 40, I kind of stopped watching them.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't seen any good horror movies in a while. If you were to pick the one movie that you think would be the number one, according to Rotten Tomatoes, the number one horror movie of all time, what would you pick?
That's tough. Number one Rotten Tomatoes, I'm going to say probably... I'm going to go Halloween, the original, like the Michael Myers 1970s.
Yeah. Classic.
I feel like that's got to be up there, right?
It is. It came in at number 7.
Okay. Whew. Is it an older movie?
It is.
That's number one? Okay.
It is an older movie. It's from the 1970s.
Okay. Is it like The Exorcist?
It is
nice.
The Exorcist. That's exactly what it is. And I'll tell you, I don't know if you know this or not, but do you know that the movie The Exorcist was based on a book? And the book was based upon an incident that occurred in St. Louis.
Really?
So when you see the green pea soup being spit out of Blair, I forgot her first name, and the bed flying around and all that, all that supposedly happened right here in St. Louis, and the priests were from St. Louis University.
That's wild. I knew that it was a book. I knew all that. I did not know that it was... Well, first, I didn't know that it was even based off a true story. And second of all, I didn't know that it was St. Louis. That's wild.
Yeah. So, I went to St. Louis University, and that's when I first heard about it. And somebody told me when I was at SLU Law School, they said, hey, you know, The Exorcist was based on something that happened here? I'm like, oh, come on. You're going to try to sell me a bridge in a swampland in Florida or something? Come on, I'm not believing that. But it actually is. It's a real incident. But some of the other movies, I'm going to see if you've seen any of these. I've seen some of them.
I've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
It's the original one, right?
Correct. That one, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I actually haven't seen that one.
Well, you know what? I personally, that wasn't one of my favorites. I saw it. The Shining.
That's a good one.
Classic with Jack Nicholson. It is. Of course, Halloween is on the list. There was a movie that ranked extremely high from 2018 called Hereditary.
I haven't seen it. I've been wanting to get around it. I've heard that movie's messed up. That's what I've heard.
Well, actually, Rotten Tomatoes put it at number 2 of all time.
Wow.
right below The Exorcist. So I do have to check that out. I've heard of it, of course. I've never seen it, but that's one that I'm going to have to check out. Also, The Ring from 2002 made the list pretty high, and something called Sinister also made the list pretty high. So that's the top 10 of horror movies, according to Rotten Tomatoes. And we may get back into some of these later on as the show unfolds. But right now, we've got to take a break. And coming up after the break, you may have heard about this massive leak or possibly a hack of the Pentagon information related to Israel. Israel's going to retaliate against Iran for the missile strike. And all of a sudden, this information came out. I reached out to the Heritage Foundation, and we're going to talk to Virginia Allen about some of the details about this Pentagon leak and how it could impact right now the situation going on in the Middle East. Brad Young, at your service tonight on 1120 KMOX. Welcome back to At Your Service, KMOX. Brad Young sitting in this evening. And as you've probably heard either in the news or from my teaser before the break, there was a massive Pentagon leak of information, and it could have immense impacts on the situation in the Middle East. So I wanted to reach out to the Heritage Foundation, Virginia Allen, who's a senior news producer there, to discuss this topic. Virginia, it's been a while since I've talked to you, but it's good to talk to you again.
It's great to be with you, Brad. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Sure. So let me set the stage here before we dive into some of the details. Iran, as most folks know, Iran fired close to 200 ballistic missiles against Israel. I believe that was in early October. And
that's right.
Most of which were shot down by, I think the U.S. Navy shot down 10 or 12, and most of the rest were shot down by the Israeli Defense Forces. But since then, the world has been waiting to see how Israel would retaliate against Iran. And while we've been waiting, what information was released and where did it come from?
Yeah, so of course, Israel vowed after that attack that they would respond, that they would retaliate, but they were going to do so strategically. And so the information that at the end of last week was leaked was specifically two documents. One contained analysis from satellite images, and then the other contained information regarding intercepted communications. So fortunately, it was not leaked, but the information that was not leaked had nothing to do with specific targets as far as, you know, targets that Israel was going to be seeking to hit within Iran. So that's the good news. The bad news is that this is classified information.
Yes.
And it shows a great breach of trust for Israel with the U.S. To have information that is meant for very, very specific eyes only, and of course, not meant for the general public to see. And for that information to get out, obviously, does harm to the U.S.-Israeli relationship.
It does. And I want to dive into that in just a moment. And by the way, Virginia, I read the dailysignal.com every single day. I mean, that's one of my top five go-to websites to get my news in the morning. So thank
you. I'm glad to hear it.
Thank you for covering this particular topic because it is extremely important. And I know you mentioned that this leak did not contain any information about specific targets, but in the event Iran might look at the type of leaked information and maybe make some guesstimates about what Israel was going to do, could this have an impact on how and to what extent Israel decides to retaliate?
It absolutely will. And I had the opportunity to sit down with Victoria Coates on the Daily Signal podcast. Victoria is the vice president of the Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation. And I essentially asked her that same question. I said, Victoria, will this now require Israel to change the plan that she said that they had? And she said, no doubt. Because of the information that was leaked, there's likely tells in relation to targets that maybe Israel would have been considering since it contained analysis of satellite images. So this is going to potentially require Israel to some extent to go back to the drawing board, which of course is not only a financial burden on Israel, but also, you know, then puts them really on defense, where they're having to now take second, you know, kind of go with a plan B,
right,
and potentially hit targets that are less impactful to Iran than they would have hoped to hit.
So one of the things that you mentioned a moment ago, Virginia, was you mentioned how this could have a it could have an impact on U.S.-Israeli relations. Now, there's certainly it's no secret that the United States is one of the largest supporters of Israel, if not the largest supporter in the world. We help them out logistically. We help them out with information. We also help them out with military arms, with direct military assistance. So what type of impact could this have? Maybe it's too soon to know whether it will or not, but what type of impact could this leak have on our relations with Israel?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just going to be hesitancy on the part of Israel, that they might think twice now before sharing some intel with us. Of course, the U.S. relationship with Israel is very strong. And, you know, the Biden administration and the U.S. government has condemned this leak. The FBI and the Pentagon are working together to lead an investigation to figure out how this information leaked, who leaked it. I think they will get to the bottom of that. Whether or not the public is informed of the details might be another story. But I'm sure that, you know, they will be able to find who leaked it. But I think Israel now might be a little slower to share some intel, which is really unfortunate for that ongoing relationship. And, you know, at a point where I think the U.S. needs to be an asset instead of a liability.
Yes.
To Israel. You know, this is really unfortunate timing, especially given the fact that, you know, there's still American hostages that are being held in Gaza. You know, we need to be in a position to work very closely and be building greater trust with Israel. And unfortunately, under the Biden administration, the Biden administration has been clear about, yes, we will continue supporting Israel, but there's been times where I think Israel has felt that support a little bit lackluster. And so this only maybe underlines some already growing tensions between the U.S. and Israel.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point that I want to circle back to, Virginia. And by the way, we're talking to Virginia Allen, senior news producer for The Daily Signal at thedailysignal.com, which, of course, is an arm of the Heritage Foundation. But there are essentially two types of information in military circles. You've got the electronic intelligence, satellites, intercepted phone calls, so forth. But you also have what's called human intelligence. And when it comes to what we need to know on the ground in the Middle East, particularly with regard to the Americans who are still being held hostage to this day in Gaza, we rely on the Israelis to a large degree, don't we, when it comes to that human intelligence from the Middle East?
That's right. You know, that relationship is critical, and the situations where Israeli hostages have been rescued, you know, that's largely been Israeli intelligence that has located those individuals and known, okay, we can go in and get them. And, you know, the Israeli government knows among the about 100 hostages that are still being held, well, about 30 of those folks are known to have already passed. And that's largely Israeli information that, you know, is able to capture and kind of figure out, okay, these folks are probably alive and these ones aren't. But, you know, specifically in looking at the Americans that are still over there, we have Adan Alexander, he's 20 years old, another gentleman named Segu Dekel Chen, he's 36 years old, Omar Nutra, he's 23 years old, and then Keith Segal, who the oldest over there right now among the Americans, he's 65 years old. And so it's critical for, obviously, for all of the hostages over there that there is great intelligence sharing between the U.S. and Israel. But specifically when we're talking about, okay, how are we going to get these Americans home? And is there a chance of a rescue operation since these peace talks are going so slow, and especially after the IDF killing the Hamas leader Sinwar, you know, it seems very unlikely that there will be a peace agreement anytime in the immediate future.
Right, and not just the Hamas leader, but actually the next in line to be in the Hamas leadership was also killed just this week.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, Israel has been very, very strategic in taking out these leaders. And at this point, speaking to Victoria Coates, she says, you know, really, the head of the snake has been cut off. And this doesn't mean that Hamas goes away, but it does mean that they are greatly debilitated. And so in all likelihood, what we've already kind of seen, and I think what we'll continue to see, is Israel really pivoting a little bit to focus its attention on Hezbollah and be very strategic about taking out Hezbollah. And they've been doing that in Lebanon and actually going into villages and homes that were storing weapons for Hezbollah. And, you know, taking and collecting those weapons. So I think we'll only see a continuation of that. And I think between now and the inauguration in January of whoever that new president is, we're going to see Israel really double down, because, you know, they don't know who the next president is going to be in the United States and whether that individual is going to be supportive of Israel. So I think they are trying to do as much as they can right now to ensure the safety of their country.
Yeah, you talk about those pictures, Virginia, and I just recall seeing about 2 weeks ago pictures in a small house. It was just from the outside, it was a regular-looking house, and then pictures from the inside showed multiple rocket-launching devices on track. They were tracked rocket launchers inside of a gutted-out house, but from the outside, it looked like a residence, but on the inside, it was clearly a military storage facility, and that's the kind of subterfuge, isn't it, that Israel's had to has been fighting against since they responded to the October 7 massacre?
That's right. That's right. I mean, and you have to think about the fact that, you know, some of these folks, no doubt, you know, they're citizens who might be opening their homes and saying, you know, yes to the terrorists. And others are just citizens that, for fear of their lives, are, you know, saying, okay, to Hamas or Hezbollah, you can use my home to store your weapons, because they want to protect their own families' lives and not be killed by these terrorists. So, you know, this is what happens when a terrorist organization takes over and starts leading a nation. And so, of course, you know, the big question that we don't have an answer to yet is who leads in Gaza and who takes over. Now that Hamas has largely been dismantled, it's not gone. But, you know, with the leaders dead now, it's okay, well, who leads Gaza? That remains a massive question mark that has not been answered.
Yes, it does. We're talking to Virginia Allen, senior news producer for the DailySignal.com. And Virginia, last question. You mentioned earlier in the interview that this was leaked information. And I know that the Justice Department has just launched an investigation into this. But do we even know preliminarily, do we know whether this was definitely a leak, or could it have been a hack, or do we have any information on that one way or the other yet?
So in official reporting is it could have been a hack. That does not seem likely. And in speaking to Victoria Coates, a national security expert at the Heritage Foundation, she said, you know, all signs are really pointing to this being a leak and not a hack. And we've had you know, initially it was sort of all, okay, this is definitely a leak. And then it seemed like they were saying, well, no, it's possible it could have been a hack. But it does, it to me, in reading multiple reports, it seems the most likely that it was a leak. And this was probably just information that was shared a little bit too broadly. And then, I mean, you look at the situation in the U.S. and, you know, from the day after October 7th, we saw pro-Palestine protests in the U.S.
Yes, we did.
So, you know, you have one individual who happens to get access to this information, who has been, you know, somewhat maybe radicalized, or, you know, maybe is just very anti-Israel or very sympathetic towards Hamas or these terrorists, whatever it might be the case. And it only takes one individual to make a copy of a document that is classified and then put it out. It was leaked onto Telegram, which is a messaging platform. And so I think the good news, and in speaking with Victoria Coates, the good news is, because of modern technology, you know, we're really able to pinpoint, and the Pentagon and the FBI should really easily be able to pinpoint, okay, this document was accessed by, you know, this group of people, and then they'll be able to track if anyone printed it, all of that information. So in theory, it shouldn't be too difficult for them to find who leaked it.
Very good. Virginia Allen, senior news producer for the Daily Signal. And Virginia, again, I check out thedailysignal.com every day. And if folks want to follow you in particular online, how can they follow what you report for the Heritage Foundation?
Absolutely. Well, you can find my reporting, all my colleagues' reporting at dailysignal.com. You can also follow me on X at Virginia_Allen5. And you can catch the Daily Signal podcast on YouTube, the Daily Signal YouTube channel, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
Very good, Virginia. Thanks for talking to us again here on KMOX St. Louis. I look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thanks so much. Have a great night.
Thank you. Good night. Hey, I want to open the phone lines up, but really this is what I want to focus our conversations on here, not just on Israel. Are you concerned about the Israeli-Iran situation? I've gotten a few people that have texted in saying that they are not in favor of U.S. supporting Israel. Others are saying that I'm glad we're supporting Israel. So number one, do you think we should be supporting Israel? Yes or no? What are the benefits or detriments to doing that? But secondly, and this is something I shy away from on this show, but I'm going to do it tonight because it's the last time I'll be in before the election. What are your thoughts on the election? And should we as Americans be focusing more on domestic issues than on international issues or even foreign conflicts overseas? Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. 314-436-7900 on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Brad Young here on KMOX tonight, literally at your service. What does at your service mean? Well, it means this. At least when I'm on the air, this is exactly what it means. If you're watching some sort of a video podcast or listening to an audiobook or even watching the news on TV, there's no interaction. There's no audience participation. But the reason why I do this show, it's not like I need a second job. My law firm keeps me quite busy during the day. But I do this because I love interacting with you, the audience. And so if you would like to be a part of the show, like you cannot do in any other medium today, you can either call or text 314-436-7900. Would love to hear from you this evening. And we've got, I'm sorry, Kyle, you told me who's been holding?
Drew.
Drew, I'm sorry. I forgot. Drew's been holding for a long time during the break. Hey, Drew.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling in this evening.
I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you.
I stand with Israel 100%. It's the only democracy in the Middle East.
Yes.
The citizens of Israel are composed of Jewish citizens, Christian citizens, Muslim citizens, and Druid citizens. They all have equal rights. There are Muslim members of their parliament. Women have rights. Men have rights. And since 2007, there have not been any Israelis in Gaza. It's been completely under the control of the Palestinians. And at the same time, unknown to most people, Israel has been bringing citizens of Gaza into Israeli hospitals to treat them when they're sick, to do heart surgeries on children at no charge and take them back. And thousands of people from Gaza have been going across the border into Israel to work every day and back into Gaza every night. So it's a beacon of freedom in the Middle East.
It truly is, Drew, and I'm a very strong evangelical Christian. So a lot of Christians obviously support Israel for many reasons. But you outlined some fantastic secular reasons to support Israel. And when you look at that Middle East, and you put up a map of democracies in the Middle East, boy, that's a dark map. There are not very many democracies. And if anyone stands for freedom and democracy, shouldn't they be supporting Israel right now?
I agree. And for people to say, well, we support the Hamas terrorists, that would be the same as after 9/11 saying we support Al-Qaeda that attacked the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, they're both terrorist organizations bent on destroying a democracy, and in that way, they're identical.
Yeah, I agree. So, Brad, I appreciate your show. I'm enjoying listening to it.
Very good, Drew. Thanks for calling in this evening.
Take care.
And whenever I was talking to Virginia Allen earlier in the show from the Heritage Foundation, I pointed out to her that, and I know from the perspective of a lot of people in this country, some of whom have been texting in here this evening, talking about how our relationship with Israel is completely one-sided, and they're a drain on us. I got to tell you, I completely disagree with that. And I'll tell you why. Because right now, we have vital interests in the Middle East. What is that? Oil. All right. No matter what you think of oil, you may be the greenest of green, Prius driving, Bernie Sanders supporting, yogurt eating, Ben and Jerry's fan on the planet. Okay. That could be you. But the reality is that this planet runs on oil. And that reality is not going to change anytime soon. We may wish it to change. We may want it to change. We may hope that it changes. But the reality is it will not change in our generation. And if the world, if democracy, if freedom runs on the engine of oil, we have a vested interest in the United States to maintain contacts and influence in the Middle East. And today, the largest supporter of the United States in the Middle East, perhaps one of the few supporters that we have in the Middle East, is Israel. So for those who are wishing for the quick demise of Israel, if that should happen, our influence in the Middle East might disappear overnight. And if that happens, we are truly, truly at the mercy of the Middle East oil sheiks. We truly are. Now, I know some, I'm a big fan of domestic oil production. And even if you say right now we have enough oil in the United States to run and power our country, that may be true. But the way our countries are interdependent today, there is not enough oil in the United States to run the United States, Europe, and Asia. It can't happen. It can't happen. So right now, we need the Middle East. And if we need the Middle East, that means we need Israel. But the question is, and if you want to call in on this, and we're going to talk more about this even in the next hour, I like to talk about ideas on this show. Not personalities, not necessarily politics, but ideas. But since this is the last time we're going to have it at your service here before the election, what are your thoughts on the election? What do you think is going to happen? What will be the outcome of the election? And more importantly, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? That's a classic question in politics, but I think truly, truly, it's one of the most relevant questions that can be asked when you walk in to the ballot box. 314-436-7900, call or text more. Of At Your Service, coming up next on KMOX. We're sliding into the last segment here on a Wednesday night At Your Service on KMOX. Brad Young with you until 10. Thanks for staying up late with us this evening. You remember this thing called, I don't know if you remember, I'm really going way back here, but it was called the St. Louis Rams. You remember? I don't know if you remember that. I know that's a long time ago, but they're in the news again. Not the L.A. Rams, the St. Louis Rams. Well, I guess kind of the L.A. Rams are in the news. But here's the issue. Well, first of all, I got to tell you, all during the 2016, 2017, 2018, all that litigation, when the Rams pulled up stakes, left town and in the dark of night, and St. Louis had to sue them in court and was the first city ever to win against an NFL team in an exiting team litigation. And I started using this phrase, and I'll use it till the day I die, and that is that Stan Kroenke is to lying as Wisconsin is to cheese. Okay? Figure it out. It's one of those comparison things. You'll laugh later. But here's what's in the news. As much as I want to blame the Rams, I mean, I want to blame the Rams for the drought, okay? I want to blame the Rams for anything, Anything that happens, it's Stan Kroenke's fault. That's the desire of my heart. But when I look at this situation and this story I want to dive into for a few minutes, we share some of the blame on this. What am I talking about? Well, remember that the Rams had a practice facility. My wife, when she was in advertising, actually got to go to this practice facility on numerous occasions, said it was extravagantly opulent. It was beautiful. It was functional. It was amazing. And one of the deals is that in order to lure the Rams to move from Los Angeles to come to St. Louis, when that happened, the rocket science Mensa candidates who were in charge of the negotiations basically, and listen, I'm a guy who negotiates for a living, all right? That's what I do. Every day I negotiate from the time I get to the office until the time I walk out of the office, I'm negotiating something. So I know a little bit about negotiation. The politicians, including Dick Gephardt and others, who signed the deal, Thomas Eagleton, who signed the deal to get the Rams to move from Los Angeles to St. Louis, basically their negotiation strategy was yes. One word, yes. So when the Rams said, we want this in our contract, they said, yes, we would like to make sure that the St. Louis pays for the stadium. Yes, we want to make sure that St. Louis has and not only pays for a stadium, but has to have a top tier stadium or we get to leave St. Louis. Yes, was the answer. To everything that the Rams wanted, St. Louis said yes. And not St. Louis, but the people who were negotiating on behalf of St. Louis. They said yes. One of the terms that they said yes to, which is outrageous, was this practice facility. That at some point, if the Rams wanted to buy this facility, they could buy it for $1. $1. Now, the current value, the current appraised value on the Rams practice facility, which is being used right now, I think it's the Lou Fuse facility, and it's being used for kids. It's an athletic park. Kids use it. Adults use it. Lots of folks use it. But the Rams want to buy it for $1. And right now, the estimated appraised value of that 27-acre property, 27 acres in St. Louis County, is $24.4 million. $24.4 million. And the Mensa candidates who negotiated this contract said they would sell it to the Rams for $1. So the Rams are trying to take over that facility. Now, they don't want it. They're going to turn around and sell it. Kroenke doesn't want it. He never wants to come to St. Louis again. But he wants to sell it to somebody for $24.4 million. And so St. Louis had to file suit to block the Rams from taking over this facility for $1. And here's their argument. And I think it's a strong one. I'm not sure it's going to work. I'm not 100% sure, but it's a strong argument. And that is, if you look at and I looked this up today, in the release agreement that Stan Kroenke and the Rams signed when they paid St. Louis $750 million, this is what it says. And I'm reading it from the contract. It released any and all claims, demands, damages, actions, and causes of action, suits, costs, attorney's fees, expenses, and liabilities of any kind whatsoever stemming from the party's prior dealings or relationship up until the effective date of the agreement, unquote. So when you look at that, St. Louis's position is you don't get that Rams facility, that practice field, for $1. You waive that whenever you settle for us for $750 million. Go away, Stan Kroenke. And so we've had to go to court. Now, the last time that the Rams had to face St. Louis in court, it didn't go so well for the Rams. So I'm hoping, nay, I say praying, that the attorneys for St. Louis will be just as effective this time as they were when they squeezed $750 million out of that wretched man Stan Kroenke's wallet. I applaud. This is when you should be loving attorneys, my friends, because right now they are fighting for St. Louis. They fought and won before, and I hope that they win once again. Brad Young Answer Service, we got another hour here on KMOX. Stick around. We'll be right back.